On September 17, 1787, the Constitutional Convention proposed the United States Constitution. When the New York Journal published the text of the document, alongside it they ran a column criticizing the Constitution as potential autocratic tyranny and calling for a no vote on ratification. This is Dr. Jim Tonkowicz, Director of Distance Learning at Wyoming Catholic College, and your host for these After Dinner Scholar podcasts. After the Revolutionary War, many in the 13 now independent states, the people of New York in particular, saw a central government as a threat. It would lead to tyranny by an aristocracy who would enrich themselves at the expense of their fellow citizens. That was certainly not what the Constitutional Convention had in mind, and Alexander Hamilton, James Madison, and John Jay, quills in hand, stepped forward to defend the document they and others labored so hard to produce. In a series of 85 newspaper columns, they not only defended the Constitution as written, but provided all the background and the logic that went into the framers' thinking. It's a book Wyoming Catholic College political philosopher Virginia Arbery dearly loves, one she has taught repeatedly, and one she is teaching again this fall. Dr. Arbery is our guest on this edition of the After Dinner Scholar. Dr. Arbery, tell us about the importance of the Federalist Papers in American history.
This is a set of newspaper articles that were meant to get the two big states of New York and Virginia to ratify the proposed Philadelphia Constitution, and 9 were needed for ratification, but if New York and Virginia weren't behind it, it would not fly and make a unified nation. So these papers were responding at first to other papers written by the Anti-Federalists, which critiqued the document for a series of different reasons, not all related. And Hamilton, Madison, and to some extent Jay, who wrote a few papers, collaborated to put these arguments on behalf of the new Constitution before the American public. Wilmore Kendall, the great American political theorist, in thinking about the role of the Federalist Papers in relation to the Constitution, I think said the most important thing. He said, the Federalist Papers give us our constitutional morality. Many of the things that are in practice are explicit in the Constitution, but the Federalist Papers, by thinking through the logic of the various articles of the Constitution, gives us a roadmap, as it were, how to proceed.
Perhaps related, how did the Federalist Papers become so central to your own thinking about American politics?
Well, now, that I really empathize with my students because, like them, when I first encountered them in graduate school, unfortunately, I didn't have it at the undergraduate level, I was shocked by the level of diction and language and the difficulty of the arguments. And thinking that these papers were accessible to the average person picking up the newspaper was a revelation to me. And going through them, I began to slow down to read it dialectically, because what the papers do, every paper has a hidden adversary, an anti-federalist argument. So you're really thinking philosophically. In fact, Martin Diamond, the great, no longer with us, political philosopher of the American regime, says that the document is the most important piece of political thought of modernity. And I think that's true. It placed for me my understanding of the social contract thinkers, and even before that, how I would understand the role of Athenian democracy or Roman republicanism, its scope, it scans the whole history of political philosophy and comes up, as they say, in Federalist 9 with a new science of politics.
What were the primary objections to the Constitution? What did the anti-federalists believe?
Unlike the general assumption that it all had to do with the Bill of Rights, that was just one and not really the most important objection. What was more important was the centralization that was being argued for in the Federalist Papers. We have to go back and understand what it was like under the Articles of Confederation. Imagine George Washington trying to get clothing for his troops. Right? Imagine him trying to pay creditors. How to keep his officers attached to the revolution without any way to pay them. And this was the problem with the loose government under the Articles of Confederation. The Articles provided that Congress could ask the states for requisitions for troops or money, but there was no way to get the troops or money from the individuals making up those states. So we needed to pull back from a loose confederation, which Publius, the pseudonym of the Federalist Papers, calls the radical vice of all confederations, pull back and instead make a strong central government that had power not over just corporate entities, but the individuals making up those corporate entities. And that was the pressing need. In fact, years before the Philadelphia Constitution, this was another revelation to me, Jim. Years before the Philadelphia Constitution, George Washington had written a circular to the states in 1781 in which he asked the governors to come up with an energetic government, one that had a strong central control that could actually do the job of government. So unbeknownst to me until long into my study of these things, Washington had mapped out the form of the new regime in 1781, and he's not the mind that Hamilton or Madison was, but it was Washington who had the idea.
So the first question of the Federalist Papers is whether or not there should be a United States of America. Mm-hmm. Why unite and risk tyranny when each state government could suffice, or at least confederacy? And how did the Federalists answer that question?
So the fear, as we've been saying, on the part of the Anti-Federalists was that the states would be neutered, as it were, by this strong central authority. But the retort that the Federalist Papers makes in number six is, you may think that you're going to be united and loosely bound by an agreement and at peace with one another. But the argument was contiguous states are often the most violent toward each other, and different sections of the country could easily split over different interests. So with a loose confederation, what we were risking was division that would lead to internal war. And they go through a list of all kinds of historical examples to show that there are men who want power, and men who want power will find a way to get it. Without a central authority, the states were vulnerable to their own preservation.
Well, and there's a good deal in the papers about the dangers of factions, the dangers of tyrannical majorities, the danger of, quote, ambition, avarice, personal animosity, party opposition, and many other motives not more laudable than these, close quote. What did Hamilton, Madison, and Jay see as the best way to mitigate against those dangers?
So this is a conundrum, isn't it? Because on the one hand, the Federalist Papers argue that we are capable of self-rule. This is a virtuous people, a candid people who are capable of self-rule. On the other hand, they keep warning against man's nature being ambitious, vindictive, and rapacious. So how are you going to make both sides of that picture work? Well, the answer, it seems to me, is found by looking at the structure. They give us a structure which will, in their view, solve the problem that's incident to republics, which is faction, as you've said. if I could just delineate this a little bit, it's very interesting to me, because a faction they understand is actuated by a passion or a belief adverse to the permanent and aggregate interests of the community.
Just contrary to the common good.
Or to a minority. Mm-hmm. Or to a minority. So you want majority rule or it's not going to be popular, right? But you also fear that the majority, as he puts it in Federalist 10, can mask its intentions behind the fact that they're the majority and this popular. So that's what you're trying to correct, overbearing majorities. Now, the argument seems a little strange, not completely foolproof, but this is it. If you enlarge the orbit, if you make a huge extended republic, you dissipate the possibility of a faction being able to get away with what they want to get away with. Not only that, and this is the positive side of the coin, by enlarging the orbit, all things being equal, you end up with more fit choices of representatives because there's a greater pool to choose from. That was the argument. So that was their argument in number 10, and they were pretty happy about that argument. Now, I don't know, as many of the students always point out, and they have been pointing this out for 40 years, which is that, well, what do you do about the mass media that makes the whole country shrink into one overbearing majority? So that's another course.
Well, actually, I was going to ask you about that as well. I mean, are the Federalist Papers still a guide for our form of government, mm-hmm. or have changes? And my immediate thought was not so much the media, but that was uh-huh. included, but mm-hmm. the enormous power of the executive branch and the so-called administrative state. Mm-hmm. Has this made the Federalist Papers merely an interesting historical document, or can they guide us still today?
Well, we have to return to them if we have any hope of rectifying the abuses that you've just mentioned. And I would add to the growth of the executive, the misuse of the judicial power with the administrative state. We have Congress reneging on its obligation to rule and pushing it into so-called experts over which they have some governance but don't really control them. And then we have the third problem, it seems to me, of the diminishment of the residual powers that belong to the states. And that is a misunderstanding of the very careful, enumerated powers of that strong central government Publius believed in. The enumerated powers are clear. The speculative powers that have emerged over the years have neutered the place of the states with regard to their own, what's called the domestic police powers, education, the family, right? Even the control of roads and buildings. All of these things that are dependent on federal funds have tilted the state's authority over formation, the education of its student, of its students, of its citizens. And it's a kind of problem that it would take the reversal of the progressive state, the administrative state, as it's called, in order to rectify. How are you going to rectify it unless you go back to the Federalist Papers and see what it's supposed to be? Right. So I think it's very enduring and lasting in its value.
Well, and while it's a challenge to read the Federalist Papers, modern newspapers, incidentally, are written to a junior high school level.
Oh,
that includes the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal.
Oh, my
so
goodness.
While it's a challenge to read the Federalist Papers, mm-hmm. it would certainly do our listeners some good to do that.
And you hope that the people that are causing the problems would read it. Because I think our readers probably are sympathetic, our listeners rather are sympathetic to our understanding. I've taught lawyers for years, Jim, and it's a crime that they don't know the Federalist Papers. And judges, if they don't know the Federalist Papers, we're in real trouble.
Good. Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
The biographical note at the beginning of my copy of the Federalist Papers comments on the education Alexander Hamilton, John Madison, and John Jay had. The colleges that they attended, it says, quote, followed the standard curriculum of the time, the liberal arts program divided between the trivium and quadrivium, and based on the ancient classics with considerable practice in scholastic disputation, The whole program was infused with religion and politics, which were the primary ends of the program, close quote. Which is to say that the great minds of the American founding were formed in similar ways to the way we seek to form minds at Wyoming Catholic College. Something to think about. For Wyoming Catholic College, this is Dr. Jim Tonkowicz.